Projects and Operations Subcommittee meeting to order. Notification of Open Meetings Act is posted in the back for your viewing pleasure. Roll call, please.
Irvin?
Here.
Teaser? Thompson?
Here.
And Vice Chairman?
Here. And note that Zach Irvin's going to fill in for Phil Davidson. Adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Irvin?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Item five, proof of publication of meetings notice. I have listed here. Item six, FY 2026 equipment requirements. Nicole, please.
The process to identify and prioritize equipment items most needed by the district was determined by a staff equipment committee. Each department within the NRD identified their equipment requirements, and the equipment committee reviewed each item and made recommendations to the general manager and assistant general manager for purchase. The general manager then reviewed the committee's recommendations and made further changes to the request list. And this is the list that we have. For machinery and equipment, we're asking for the fifth and final payment for a Caterpillar tire loader at $39,497. This purchase was approved by the board in 2020. The annual trade for a Bobcat track skid loader for operations and maintenance and park maintenance, budgeted at $7,500. A 2025 Rhino flex mower at the state contract price of $17,500, replacing the district's 2019 mower. A 2025 20-foot Trail King trailer at the state contract price of $22,475, replacing the district's 2015 14-foot trailer. A 2026 John Deere tractor at the state contract price of $167,421.44, replacing the district's 1994 John Deere tractor. And a 2026 20-foot PJ flatbed trailer, replacing the district's 2016 30-foot trailer at the state contract price of $9,626.25. For our survey department, we are requesting a Leica GNSS smart antenna, which will be replacing outdated district equipment at the government price of $12,936.75. For automobiles and trucks, we are requesting a 2026 minivan, budgeted at $50,000, which will be replacing the district's 2010 Chrysler with 110,000 end-of-year miles and over $10,000 in maintenance. A 2026 half-ton crew cab replacing the district's 2018 Ram 1500 with almost 120,000 end-of-year miles and over $26,000 in maintenance, and this is budgeted also at $50,000. Also, a 2026 half-ton crew cab replacing the district's 2019 Ram 1500 with 140,000 end-of-year miles and almost $20,000 in maintenance. This vehicle, budgeted at $50,000, will be purchased using rural water funds. For office equipment, we are requesting network equipment for the new Blair shop. This item is actually carryover from the current 2025 budget, $10,000. Replacement of virtualization host, $40,000. Replace user desktops, $45,000. Replace main firewall, $25,000. Director equipment, $7,500. And then miscellaneous equipment at $15,000. So the total fiscal year 2025 budget was $570,621. The current budget that we are requesting is $519,456.44. So management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the Board of Directors to approve the proposed fiscal year 2026 equipment requirements subject to funding in the fiscal year 2026 budget. And I can answer any questions.
Directors, do I have a recommendation? Do I have a...
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second.
I did have a question.
Director Teaser, you have the floor.
on the miscellaneous equipment, is a mice living or dead?
Is a what?
I'm not sure how to answer that.
Dead.
Any other directors? Anybody in the audience who wishes to speak? Roll call.
Irvin?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Vice Chairman?
Yes. Item seven. Sorenson to Gerard Trail. Item A and B, airport and police.
Yep. Good afternoon, everyone. The Sorenson to Gerard Trails project we've been working on for a few years, and the first portion to the east of 72nd Street is currently under construction. There's two different items here. The first is the professional services amendment to the contract with FHU, and then the second is the construction change order. On the first, this would be the third amendment to the contract. We've had previous amendments related to storm drainage that was kind of outside of the original scope. Global stability analysis from Amendment 2 related to the retaining wall on the project, and that has led to Amendment 3, which is recommended now, an update to the plan quantities related to a shift of the location of the retaining wall from the uphill side to the downhill side of the trail. Looking backwards, this project began in with a conceptual study in 2022. We identified two different halves of the project, essentially the eastern portion, which I mentioned is currently under construction, often referred to as the Gerard connection, and the western side that includes an underpass at 72nd Street. That conceptual study was done by FHU, and it was very successful at identifying the easier portion of the project to be conducted locally in collaboration with the City of Omaha, and that's the project we're currently working on. We also identified a much larger federal aid project to the west side, and we successfully applied for and received 80% federal funding from MAPA to cover the underpass and the trail connection to the west. That conceptual study also identified the anticipated cost for design and construction of both halves of the project. So we moved into a professional services agreement with FHU for the eastern portion, the Gerard connection portion of the project, and began the design work. Based on a relatively old railroad corridor, a more challenging condition than we've seen for a lot of other trail locations. We moved through the design, got the project ready for bid. The bid for the project, engineer's estimate was $1.4 million. We had 9 bids received, ranging from $919,000 to $1.3 million. So they were all very close together and very competitive bids, which we were very happy with. During the bidding process, we did not receive any comments from any of the contractors about the wall, either ahead of time or during the pre-bid meeting. There was a retaining wall identified on the plan set by FHU, and usually when you put a gravity block retaining wall on a plan set like that, the contractor will have a subcontractor to do the wall construction specifically, and work related to the wall will be done during construction to verify the shop drawings and make sure that the specifics for the wall are aligned between the plan set and the construction contractor. So again, we did not receive any comments at the time. There was preliminary geotech analysis done by Teal during the design phase, and that did include some stability analysis and identified a 425-foot retaining wall would be expected, a modular block gravity retaining wall. So there was preliminary work that anticipated a retaining wall in the project, and Teal did that during the design phase. There was not any additional expectation that the site would need any kind of a change or significant additional work outside of retaining wall next to trail, which we've done on other projects. Specifically, the South Omaha Trail, led by the City of Omaha, has a very similar type of retaining wall, similar height, similar function. We made it through the bidding, and we got to the pre-construction meeting with the selected contractor, Navarro, and their subcontractor, Linhart, who specializes in retaining walls. And they received very positive reviews from our engineering team at that pre-construction meeting. We were very glad that Linhart was part of the team because they have excellent experience in this area. During the pre-construction meeting, the primary design consultant, FHU, their construction administration sub-consultant, EGA, the primary contractor, Navarro, their wall subcontractor, Linhart, and myself all discussed the fact that the plans called for a retaining wall, but Linhart felt that some additional investigation would be necessary in order for them to build that wall. So Amendment 2, as I mentioned earlier, was for Teal to do additional, what's called a global stability analysis, kind of more in-depth analysis of the entire area where the wall would be located to verify should the wall be on the uphill side of the trail with a cut for the trail to be constructed, or should we move the wall to the downhill side and elevate and have the trail in a fill section. Teal's additional analysis recommended that for stability of the wall and the trail, it should be on the downhill side, and that was different from the plans. And so between the consulting team and the contracting team, they went back and made updates to verify that we know what would be necessary in order to construct the wall on the other side of the trail. And so the professional services amendment that we have today focuses on the work necessary to update the plans and the quantities to move the wall to the other side of the trail, and then carry out the construction administration to see that wall constructed to support the trail on the side of the hill. We are currently holding on the site, and we have been for a few weeks, waiting for approval of the professional services amendment and the construction change order, which is the next item, so that both teams can continue moving forward with the project. We do have representatives from both FHU and EGA here today. FHU, again, is the prime consultant on the project. They did the design. That includes the retaining wall. EGA is the sub-consultant. They're responsible for construction administration, and so Mark is on site with me at the construction meetings and has been kind of intimately involved in walking through, looking at the stability of the slope where the wall and trail will be located, and then discussing with the construction team. I do think that it is possible that the wall could have been located on the other side of the trail in the initial design, but that is a design judgment, and FHU's original design called for the wall on the uphill side. We have seen walls on both sides of trails in our area. I mentioned the South Omaha Trail with the wall on the downhill side. The Keystone Trail has several retaining walls at underpasses on the uphill side, so both designs have been used in the past. And again, when that gets to construction, the stability of the wall is identified by the contractor and the wall subcontractor, and then shop drawings are finalized with the design team. So through the additional analysis that we've done over the recent weeks, we feel that it's more appropriate to have the wall on the downhill side. The construction contractor is ready to move forward and build that wall and then put the trail on top of that wall. But again, they're holding until we get everything finalized to make sure we know exactly what we want to see constructed. And the recommendation is to approve a third amendment to the professional services agreement with FHU, covering the services related mostly to the retaining wall in an amount of $19,100, bringing the total contract to $189,441. And again, I'm available to answer any questions, and both FHU and EGA are here to answer any more specific questions as well.
Thank you, Eric. We're going to take item 7A and B separately for...
Yes.
What is your pleasure, directors? Do I have a motion for 7A? Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. Anybody in the public wish to speak to this?
Okay. Quorum. Roll call.
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
Irvin?
Yes.
Keiser?
Yeah.
And Vice Chairman?
Yes.
Item 7B. Any motion?
So we have some over yes to present.
Yes, sir.
Well, we took them separately.
Do it.
He already covered both of them.
Did you cover both, Eric?
There are some other items on the construction side I'd be glad to explain if you'd like.
It's fair when we'll have everybody speak to us. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second, anybody?
Second.
I have a second. Anybody wish to speak to this? And directors.
This is on the memo April 30th with the little tab on it.
Yes, this is the construction change order.
The question I have is, I believe it was here when Navarro was going to haul a bunch of it. oh, maybe it's on the other one. Dump a bunch of loads from, see, the dump pile on site.
Yes.
Can you explain that 40 loads of a dump pile, is that previous dumping ground for some concrete or something?
Sort of. You can see here that the rail corridor is on the north side of the hospital. It was functionally abandoned for about 40 years. So during design, we did see that there was trees and kind of low grub cover all over the site. It was assumed that the pile that we noticed was, it was kind of covered with grass clippings, so it was believed to be a lawn maintenance pile from the hospital, mostly. When we got to the construction phase, the contractor began poking at it, and after you scrape off the tree branches and the grass clippings from the top, it turns out it's a big pile of trash, including some broken concrete and other material that's not suitable to be composted, as was assumed both during the design phase and during the bidding and until we got there. So this was something that we physically looked at. We saw it during the walkthrough, we saw it several times. The contractor began clearing the site and uncovered what was kind of substantially different than we anticipated. We walked it out, quantified it, and they've given an estimate for a unit price on debris removal. This item is already on the project at another location with other different broken concrete, so this was not in the original plans because we physically couldn't see that it was concrete underneath of the trees and grass.
Yeah, that's understandable. I guess, and that's Emmanuel land, or whose land was that? And I guess during the years and decades, it just may have been dumped there. No.
Yeah, Chicago Northwest Railroad, and then it went to the hospital. They have, or they are in process of finalizing the deed transfer to the city of Omaha. I should check with them to make sure they finished that. But yes, the entire rail corridor parcel is transferred to the city of Omaha for ongoing operations and maintenance, but the hospital did own it. And so the stuff that's out there, some of it is, again, the kind of lawn maintenance stuff was understood to have been from the hospital. There's a bunch of other stuff out there that was from some time in the last 40 years. There's some picnic tables, street signs, all kinds of other stuff that, again, we could kind of see that it's a former industrial railroad corridor site, but when the contractor, when Navarro did the original clearing, they uncovered quite a bit of stuff, and that's what led to the debris removal, some of the additional tree removal, some of that stuff that, again, literally physically couldn't be seen. And there's a photo from 2021 in here, the one with all the trees in it. That was looking down the rail corridor. The following photos are to show what it looks like now that we've uncovered everything. And why couldn't we see some of that stuff? There you go. That's what the corridor looked like. And so we just couldn't physically see the stuff during the initial design phase.
Jim, a lot of it was illegal dumping because it was such a wooded area and it was an added access of people. Just, yeah.
That's right.
And no medical waste.
No. We know of that.
Just large physical damage. Yeah. They're prepared to take it away. And that picnic table, I don't know where that came from. I think maybe hospital staff or maintenance staff were out there. But they'll have a nice trail to walk on now, and they're very appreciative of that.
Okay, thank you. Any other directors? Roll call.
Storm?
Yes.
Irvin?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yeah.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Vice Chairman?
Yes. Item 8, interlocal agreement with the City of Blair for water quality basin cost share. John Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we've been working on this with the City of Blair for a couple years now. They have a unique opportunity to partner with the Easter Seals. They've purchased the old Dana campus, and they're creating a facility there, the only one in Nebraska, I might add, and Iowa has two, so we're going to get one. But so we've been working with the city administration on this. Cabo Creek has been a historically difficult creek with sloughing, erosion. They've also had some repairs to infrastructure, trail that was caused by erosion from this area. So they have a unique opportunity to partner with the Easter Seals to create a basin on the Easter Seals property, which would retain 100% of the current 230-acre watershed there, which would reduce that erosion in the creek, reduce flows, and also help with the floodplain downstream. And this also happens to go through the most developed area of Blair. So we have folks from Blair, Phil Green, CJ Heaton, and Tim Metterbrink to kind of go over their presentation here. We've already budgeted this item. It's been in the budget for 2 years now. And so now they're at the point where we are ready to move on this. And the City of Blair has already approved the interlocal and it would be up to the board if you so choose to approve this as well. Go ahead.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Winkler. Appreciate that, directors. Hello. My name is Phil Green. I'm the city administrator from the city of Blair, and we are finally to the point where we're ready to hopefully be able to move forward with this project. As Mr. Winkler had explained, Cobble Creek kind of runs along the western side of the city of Blair, runs up through the northwest area south of Highway 91. It's mostly still agricultural properties, but once you cross over Highway 91, it goes into the former Dana campus area and then into the regular city of Blair. And we've had challenges over the years of bank sloughing and other issues, erosion getting into that, that creek area. When the Dana campus had closed down and it's kind of passed through a couple different hands, it now is in the ownership of Easter Seals, and they have this wonderful idea of this camp that they would like to do. And they're looking at this retention pond, body of water that would work both for silt preservation, would help with the sloughing of Cobble Creek, and would be a great amenity for their camp and something beautiful for their patrons to be able to walk around. So I'm going to turn it over to Tim Mettenbrink. He's going to kind of talk a little bit more about the details, what they're looking at doing. But City of Blair is very, very supportive of this project and would like to be able to cooperate with you. So thank you for your consideration.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Mettenbrink, and I'm here today representing Easter Seals Nebraska. As the property owner and an interested party in this with the agreement that would go on between Blair and you. So just running through this presentation, I won't take a lot of your time, but we do want to show you what's going on with Cobble Creek, show what the future development might look like, and what the long-term project benefits might be for this particular piece of work. So from an overview standpoint, the city of Blair primarily is in here. The Cobble Creek is the yellow line that runs, and this actually drains from the south to the north, runs up to Cameron Ditch, and then eventually runs out into the Missouri River. So there's a lot of potential for development in addition to what's already in Blair to the south and to the west of this area impacting Cobble Creek down the road. So on an aerial view, again, you see the creek in yellow. And the worst part of this is between the two straight lines that are out here where the arrows indicate the direction of flow. It's the developed portion of Blair. It's where they had a problem with the biking and pedestrian trail a number of years ago. A lot of sloughing in that piece. And this is a pretty good look at what that creek looks like. It's heavily wooded, really natural, but the soils are really loose, so it sloughs a lot. And we've got an opportunity with the Easter Seals project to kind of hit this right before the worst stretch of this particular creek. And the aerial indicates right where we're at with this. So Easter Seals purchased 64 acres of the former Dana College campus. It's the red line here. The remaining portion of the campus is up in this area. Cobble Creek down here in the yellow. Union Pacific Railroad, as it leaves town to the west, runs out here. And then this is Highway 91 that comes into town on this side. The property is really steep. There's about 250 feet of fall from the north on this property down to the south. And there's a couple of drainage ways in here. So the area actually is about 240 acres that runs into this particular property and then it goes into Cobble Creek from there. And the aerial view of this, I'm trying to show that the green lines are the drainage ways out in the entire drainage area. The red line is the property line. This is where most of the water picks up and runs through Easter Seals property. And this is the low point on the property before it gets into the creek. So we're looking at that for a basin location, and we really want to take care of that primary drainage way through there. So this is actually a view of the low spot on the property before it gets to the creek. There's a natural depression in that area, and it's already got signs of having sloughed off, even from when I was first out there 3 years ago. So it's a pretty nasty little drainage. And then this is a view of the drainage way that runs through the property. This is a view looking south. This drainage way comes from the west and over to the east. And then this is a view kind of on the upper end of it looking down the hill towards the low point on the property down below. So this drainage way has got some you know, some solid vegetation on it. We think the slopes are pretty decent in here, and we really want to make sure that we take care of that. We'd like to slow the water down as it comes into that area, maybe pond it, maybe, you know, use it for, you know, more natural vegetation, wetlands area, that type of thing. So, yeah, this is actually a view, right? It's on Easter Seals property as it runs down into Cobble Creek down there, showing the topography in this area. Those banks are really steep. And so by creating a silt basin, we hope to really handle a lot of sediments, a lot of pollutants that come into this thing. Fortunately, not much of the upstream property is cropped, and ours will no longer be. So I think the pollutant piece of it is pretty minimal, but nonetheless. We'd like to build it to retain, you know, a great deal of this, reduce the flows, reduce the sloughing in the stream. And then downstream, I think we can have an impact, too, as not adding to the floodplain issues that happen through Blair and beyond. And then, obviously, the basin, we hope, will provide, you know, boating and fishing opportunity for those kids who come to the camp every year. And then, as I talked about this primary drainage way, we'd really like to do something similar to what the state did at Platte River South, you know, maybe on our own scale. But they dammed it up, they slowed it down, you know, really created a great little environment out of that. And there happens to be, and we don't know much about this yet, but part of this work is going to be looking at an existing outfall structure that we found down in the creek. And this is a pretty deep box culvert of some kind, and if it's, you know, if it's usable, we just don't know yet, but maybe there is some infrastructure down there we can use without tearing that place up again, which we really hope to find that out. So project costs, we're looking at about $750,000 on this thing, and we could probably get done next year. First step, we've got the people lined up, engineering, wetland study. We're going to do soil drilling, that type of thing, right away. Get started, so we'll just get onto a natural course and get this thing done. And then this is a view of what Easter Seals is now heavily into fundraising for. This is the camp. We sort of split it into the north camp and the south camp, and there's some topography difference here. But for purposes of our conversation today, this is where the natural drainage way comes through the site. This is the basin location in Cobble Creek down in this area. We really intend on creating the camp environment in all of this right here. And access to the property would be from Highway 91 down below, and then really have as minimal an impact as we can in this place. Make this a very rural, campy kind of a place. So that's the presentation. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, sir. Directors, do I have a motion?
Move.
Got a second?
Rod.
Rod, down. Okay. Anybody from the public want to speak to this? Directors, any questions?
Yeah, I have no question, just a comment. I think this is a project's been in the works, as John said, for a number of years. It's a great project for a number of reasons, but the thing that I'm excited for is it consistent with what the city has done over the last few number of years in establishing for stormwater management, grade stabilization of the Cobble Creek there, and this will be a tremendous asset to that in that stretch of Cobble Creek. So I think it's very consistent with what the goals of the NRD are.
Anybody else?
So how big will this pond be?
That's part of the study that we'll do here initially, but it's in the neighborhood of maybe 2 acres.
Okay.
So it's not a huge deal.
Anybody else? Roll call.
Irvin?
Yes.
Keyser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
And
Vice Chairman? Yes. Item 9. Amendment number 1 for the Silver Creek Watershed, Site 35 Alpha, Small Flood Control and Water Quality Project, Terry Schumacher.
Good afternoon. In December of 2024, so not that long ago, the Board of Directors approved an agreement with Houston Engineering to provide the necessary services for the Silver Creek 35A project in Burke County, basically to do geotech, preliminary investigation, and kind of figure out what hazard class this structure would need to be. That process has been completed along with an application to the Water Sustainability Fund for funding for the project. So we're on to the next phase, which is final design, permitting, mitigation, bidding, and construction. So basically taking it to the end of the project when we actually have a project on the ground. We've discussed this with Houston and come up with professional services for amendment number one in a total not to exceed amount of $837,596. Bringing the total contract, including amendment number one, to $994,022. The proposed scope and work are attached in this, so we would move with the staff recommendation.
Do I have a motion?
Second.
Anybody wish to speak to this from the audience? Directors.
Is there an issue with the Water Sustainability Fund?
Yeah, funding.
That's the only issue. I didn't mean to be flippant, but yes, it's with the budget challenges, they're kind of sweeping money.
So what happens if you don't get the?
It will continue. We just will have to find other avenues or budget it just out of our general fund. Yeah.
But it may, in the new directors, I'm on the Nebraska, DNRC, Nebraska Natural Resource Commission. Well, I'm the representative from the Pappy, Missouri NRD and represent the Missouri Tributaries Basin. And four times a year we meet in Kearney, basically. And we, you know, have a committee with the WSF funding, and once a year a subcommittee of that committee that will then grade the different projects and award, allocate whatever funding is available. And this time around, I had reported on that our last meeting that, you know, the attitude or was, you know, that people are wondering if there will be any subcommittee or committee of that can be around for the next year or two. But as it stands, they're still waiting on that funding to see if there will be anything in the WSF. So stand by.
As a follow-on to that, does that mean that the funding is going to be pulled back for the? I heard it was going to be pulled back or cut in half. You have any insight as to?
I don't have the inside, but I just report what was said at the meeting. So,
another question. I when we first approved this for 150 some thousand. Whatever it was, 156. Did we know it was going to be that much more after these other scope of the contract was defined?
Well, we had an idea. I mean, we did a similar project not too long ago while it's under construction in the Payne Creek 319 watershed. And that contract to get to completion is a little over $1 million. It's with a different firm. So, that's kind of in the ballpark.
And is this part of taking out that other dam we built? This contract that was no longer needed? We're going to.
Yeah, the PJ button, yeah. It's different. A different project.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Silver Creek.
Okay. And Jim, I'm glad you brought that. In that vein of, when we have these multi-phase contracts, and Brent and I and Amanda had a conversation yesterday about this, because we initial planning and design is usually a smaller number, and then we move into the next phases of the contract. So I think what we're going to do is when we approve those, we're going to kind of give a ballpark or a rough estimate of what you as the board can expect for the next phases. Now, you can't hold them, they'll be exact, but at least they'll give you some idea knowing that, yeah, you spent $100,000 here and now it's $900,000.
well, what's the difference? And so we need to do a better job of saying, okay, this ultimately at the end of the day will probably cost this by the time we're done, or in that ballpark. So it'll give you a better idea of what you can expect, and when you get these amendments, then you know that, yeah, it's close or not. So,
and on that vein, we practiced that with the last ad hoc committee where Ian got with us and explained a little bit detail. So yeah, please continue with that.
And why we didn't think of that earlier, I don't know, but whatever. Better late than never.
Always an opportunity.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Tim, please.
I agree, that would be very helpful to have that. I was curious as to, it's likely the funds won't be available from the Water Sustainability Fund. Where would you find those funds?
Well, we'll flip over every couch cushion like we usually do, but at the end of the day, our budget's going to be, as always, tight, and we have a lot of maintenance coming up, and we'll talk about that as we get closer, but you may have to make some tough decisions on different projects and either delaying them or canceling them or, and so those will come through. We'll maybe put that priority list, and obviously the board can prioritize. And with limited resources, sometimes you just have to direct. State funding is going to be tough for the next few years. Federal funding is going to be tough for the next few years. We're barely hanging on to what we already have obligated, sometimes. So it's going to be a little difficult.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Yes.
Storm?
Yes.
Urban? Yes.
And Vice Chairman?
Yes. And with that, the PO is adjourned. Director Teaser, you have the con.
No. Larry Bradley's going to do it.
Oh, okay.
Congratulations.
Okay.
FGL. Usually I have the...
The Reedy Subcommittee?
Yeah, the Subcommittee Procedures. Okay, that's the L, so...
I didn't have it in mind either. Maybe put it back there.
No, she just can't move it forward. I have a Director Bradley.
There we go, we'll go with that. Just roll with it. Item, Subcommittee FEL, Expenditure and Legal Sub... Thank you, here we go. Copy of the Open Meetings Act, revised state statute 84-41407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back of the wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. With that, this called the meeting to order and posted item number 2, Open Meetings Act. Number 3, quorum call.
Adams?
Here.
Teaser?
Yes, here.
Hubbard?
Here.
Present. Adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Can we
Adams?
Yes.
Easer?
Yes.
Hubbard?
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Vice Chairman?
Yes. All right. Proof of publication of the meeting notice has been posted. We have item number 6. District Legal Services, John Winkler.
Chairman, District Legal Counsel agreement is due for approval, and obviously our contractors with Hush Blackwell. We have Brent and Peyton and Adam who do most of our work here in attendance if you have any questions. This would be an extension from May 9th of 2025 to June 30th of 2028. Brent, when did you guys, I forgot the date when you started. I should put a memo, but.
I started in 2016, but I think Hush Blackwell started in
2012. 2012, yeah, that sounds right. So just a little history. The district, when I first started, we had, I would say, a one-man show, legal counsel. no support staff. Just he did, and we were probably the majority of his work. And I can say from a management perspective, and Amanda was around too, project managers would, we had lists of work that was delayed or needed to be completed. And it was a constant battle. And then also if other legal questions came up, we had to consult with outside counsel. So he would have to consult with another attorney, especially during labor issues and things like that. So the district had a process where we interviewed firms. Back then, Hush Blackwell was selected. A number of years ago, we did go back out again and interviewed firms. And again, Hush Blackwell was selected. So I can say now, and I think we've got most of our project managers here and Amanda too, that we do not wait for anything now. When we submit contracts or anything of that nature, it's completed and it's timely. And we have not had any issues at all. If it's a real estate issue, if it's a legal issue, or an employee issue, labor relations issue, they have obviously the attorneys that can handle that. And it's just another call to Marnie or whoever else handles that for us. So from my perspective, they have done the district a great service, and I would recommend that they continue to do that. Because they've only shown quality work, and obviously Adam steps in when he needs to, and Peyton as well. So, but they're here to answer any questions you have. But as far as from a staff perspective, a management perspective, they do a fabulous job.
Thank you, John. Like John said, we can handle any questions. I did just want to say I appreciate the opportunity to continue to provide legal services, and I asked Peyton and Adam to be here. I know you've seen them here, but it's not just me. There's a team, Peyton, Adam. We've got our labor employment attorneys, Amanda Jolie and Marnie Jensen, who also help out, who couldn't be here tonight. But we've got a deep bench of lawyers with different specialties, and I just want to make sure that you all know that it's not just, you know, Brent here at these meetings doing all the work. So happy to take any questions.
All right, with that, anybody from the public wish to speak on this item?
You need a motion.
Need a motion, thank you. Okay, there's a motion by Director Teaser. Is there a second?
Second
by Director Hubbard. All right, then we move into discussion. Anybody from the public? Staff? Directors? Director Teaser?
Well, I've been on here 30-some years, and I was here before and during your tenure, and I can just tell you there's just absolutely no, you're not remotely anywhere close to being, how do I say this?
I hope it's good.
Yeah.
Where? This is good, but I don't want to criticize a dead man, but yet you are just wonderful, the firm. And anytime I had a question of you or your staff, I generally had an answer within 24 hours. And I really admire that, because when I used to ask questions of the other attorney, I can wait 2 months. Sincerely.
That's possible.
And I really appreciate what Hush has done for us. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We we take pride in our work, so it's great to hear that.
Yeah, just to echo Director Teaser's remarks, I think Tim and I and Rich remember the old days more than the rest you never could imagine. So yeah, we've stepped in the right direction. Couldn't have been 6 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, we went out for solicitation. Mm-hmm. We had a new director who didn't quite get it, and So let's see what else is out there. We learned something. We learned that we still have a fantastic firm at our disposal at a reasonable price. And what resulted from that solicitation was a bid of professional service, which we never go out for legal services. But when we did, there's a couple of firms that, one didn't include any clerical help, and we would have to hire two people, for example. And obviously we rejected that, so we had a temporary situation, a short-term contract, which I'm glad to see we have before us a positive extension for the next few years. So good job. Appreciate that.
Director Adams?
Yes. Mr. Winkler, I see the term as exceptional performance, and that made me wonder if there is, that sounds like a performance review, kind of the far end of a scale. For my education, is there a annual performance review?
No.
That's more informal.
I think we review a monthly when we have our list of to-dos, and we meet in a staff meeting, and you know, the list is checked off. But there's no, like, we come down and check boxes A, B, or C. We don't have that for them, but I think just their performance is, month after month is
overall
impactful.
Assessment. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Well, and go ahead.
I just like, I'll chime in there while we're at it. Unparalleled service professionalism, all the above over the 20-some years we've been on the board. And in the darkest times when we were facing a lot of things, you guys stepped up the plate really hardcore, and working with Tim Gay and gang to really bring it all together, because we do remember those old days. But thank you.
Well, I do have a question. Mm-hmm. I'm talking, and then finally the mic comes on. But I have no, for me, no issue voting for the extension. I just want to make sure that as the district, should we supposed to have advertised this or let people know, or is it within our means and our rights to go ahead and extend the services?
Yep.
Because there may be some questions out there from the public or other law firms. Just
you can extend as long as you want.
Okay.
And we've already went through the dog and pony show a number of years ago. And
I know. Yeah. All right. Well, any further questions? I guess that. Put it up for a vote now tonight, or just
roll call? Yep.
Roll call.
Urban.
Yes.
Adams.
Yes.
Heiser.
Yes.
Hubbard.
Yes.
And Vice Chairman.
Yes. All right. Item number seven, seventh and final addendum to General Manager Agreement, John Winkler.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I've been with the district. It'll be 20 years this year, 25 as December of 31. So I would ask for an extension. I can finish my 25 years, and then I will happily head out and do other things. But so this is my seventh and final addendum to my contract. It's been extended, obviously, well, at least five times, six times with any other addition. I'm not asking for anything more. Just continue to do what I do. Enjoy every second of it. And I think in this transition period, or I won't call it transition period, but in this second or seventh final addendum, things can be starting to get transitioned into what I do to you know, Amanda and others, that we can make that. So when I do walk out the door December 31st, you won't miss a beat. So, but I would appreciate your support. I don't know what else I could possibly do or have done, but we have a lot of things that we'd like to complete, a number of projects that I would like to see get done, and then be gladly handed over to whoever you guys choose as my successor. So happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, we need a motion on this item.
I strongly move that we submit the staff recommendation.
All right, any second?
Second.
Director Hubbard. All right, we will now discuss this item. Anybody from the public wish to speak? Staff, and remember, staff, you're...
no torches or pitchforks yet.
Permission to speak freely. All right, anybody from the directors?
I don't like the tone that you're going to quit in 6 years. I don't know if I should approve it or not. Yeah. But we'll know in 6 years what y'all got to do. Yeah. So there might be a brand new board by then. Who knows?
Well, general managers are a lot like fish and in-laws. You know, you ground too long and you really start to smell. So, but I thought 25 years is a good career. And I don't want to be, I just don't want to be the guy that sticks around and
you know, is just there because I've been here forever. I think that's a good age to retire from this. And I, like I said, I would like to do some other things. And but I've learned some things, you know, for example, when Marlon passed away, you know, he's in his 70s and really never got to retire and kind of do it. I mean, he loved doing what he done, but that impacted me quite a bit. It's like, yeah, there's a time when you just need to say.
I understand. Yeah. I can relate. So, yeah. I think it's great to have you aboard.
Well, thank you.
Getting back to a previous discussion about legal services, and I won't go into detail, but I'm happy with the work, very happy with the work you've done.
Thank you.
I highly recommend this item gets approved and continue our wonderful no worry support from the from this director on the job you do.
Well, that's all great people out here that make it look easy, so they make it easy.
Other directors, go ahead, Director McCormick.
It reflects your management ability that you're setting the table for the next manager to come in and staff, and you've done a magnificent job. I'm proud to be associated with this district. Thank you.
And anybody else? I'll just say, yes, Director Winkler, you are very attentive and answer phone calls, and no matter what, you know, if it's the weekend or time of night, you're pretty on a train not to bother you when you're off hours, but you know, very approachable and knowledgeable. And
the best ideas are written on bar napkins, so, you know, I get those calls.
With that, we'll go with the vote. Roll call.
Hubbard?
Yes.
Berman?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Vice Chairman?
Yes. Item number 8.
Thank you, everyone.
And you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Douglas County Buyout Acquisitions, Lori Lasker.
Good afternoon. This is the final batch of properties in a project that has been going on for a very long time. After the 2019 floods, we had several areas within the district that were hit very hard, one of those being King Lake in Douglas County. Once we have a large disaster declaration like that, grant money becomes available through FEMA through their hazard mitigation grant program. We worked with some of the residents in King Lake after those floods to determine interest in a voluntary buyout. This is a completely voluntary program. They can choose to accept or decline the offer at their will. We originally had 25 properties. We didn't quite get there, but these are the last 3 grant-funded properties that we do have. And then there's one additional lot or parcel that wasn't included in the grant application, but is owned by one of the owners, and he would like to sell that as well. So the first one is 24116 Curtis Avenue. And this, let me see. Sorry, there's a lot of numbers in these, so I don't have them all straight in my head. So this originally included 4 parcels. 2 parcels were deeded to neighbors, so we are only purchasing 2 parcels. That has been subtracted from the appraisal. The offer amount is $16,830, of which FEMA pays 75%. And then we have a community development block grant that pays the other 25%. So the district will not spend any money on this property. Do you want me to go through all of them now or go one by one?
Maybe.
We vote one by one.
One by one. One by one.
So we are recommending approval of this. We have checked with FEMA, and they verified that this owner did not receive any other assistance after the flood, so there is no duplication of benefits, and he's entitled to the full appraised amount. With that, I can answer questions.
All right.
If this wasn't the last batch that we were going to do, I would be objecting to buying vacant land. I don't think it's appropriate. They can't build on it. We're going to end up getting stuck with it. We're going to have to maintain it. It's not going to be parkland, and it would just seem to me the money could be better spent elsewhere. That's enough.
Well, we need a motion for item number eight.
8A.
8A, 8 Alpha.
Could I ask a question first?
Hopefully I can answer it.
So I see that we provided an appraisal and then they provided a second appraisal. I only saw that we went with their appraisal. Can you tell me the gap?
So we have to include an appeal process in our grant. And so so we pay for one appraisal. And if they think that offer is too low, then they are entitled to pay for another appraiser. And we can take the higher of the two values. If their appraisal meets all of the qualifications, a licensed real estate appraiser. So yeah, we do typically take the higher of the two values with these.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Back to funding. Is this FEMA money going to be there?
Yeah. So we are you go ahead, Lori.
So this grant program, as of today anyway, has not been affected by any of the recent actions taken at the agency level or the administrative level.
And if something does happen, then what does that negate all of these?
So with what has happened with the BRIC grant program, which is what has been rescinded, this project has been fully obligated and started. So they are still paying out those projects, is the current guidance. So I don't have, because this was from a 2019 grant, I don't have any concerns about this funding not being available. We are significantly under budget on this project as well, so.
I think we're okay on this
one. Yeah, I'm under fully obligated. They're in that long ago. They're pretty much good to go.
Okay, with that, Director Storm.
What's the plan for the use of the land once it's all been acquired?
So at King Lake, we don't have an overall plan. We do kind of work with there's a homeowners association, and we work with them to allow temporary uses of the lots that we have out there. They've done cleanup days. They do annual, picnics, that sort of thing, and they will use those. We seed them and kind of try to keep them cleaned up, which doesn't always happen. I'm out there a few times a year because someone's dumped something. So we do have some maintenance involved, but we don't, there's no overall plan for a park or an access site or anything.
Yeah, so I was doing Google Maps document too. See.
How many parcels do we have out there again, Lori, that we purchased over the years? Total?
Exactly.
You know, I didn't know off your head.
Probably upwards of 20 or 30. It's been a process for sure.
All right. Go ahead, Director Thompson.
So back to the plan. I think eventually it was allowed to go back to nature, right? But we still mow it and maintain it? To that degree.
Yeah.
And so in this case, this is vacant land now, right?
No, there is a home on this property.
On this item, mm-hmm. Well, is this Rich? Is this the one you were talking about, or is there another one?
We have the same man's got some vacant property we're buying.
Yeah.
The vacant one is not what we're buying.
On this?
Not for this.
Not particular.
Not for item 8A.
It'll come up in a second.
Okay, generally speaking, if we're buying vacant land, whatever, whether it's ABC or D, we're just trading the mowing responsibility from the owner to us.
And the county's losing taxes.
And the county what?
It's losing tax revenue.
That's another thing. But so if, in fact, they do mow it, and for the new directors, 30 property parcels, and maybe by Thursday, and if you guys, the new directors would want an idea how much property we own in Kings Lake, it'd be helpful, I think, to refresh, giving us old directors, older tenured directors to see where we stand in this, especially if it's a last go-round, so we can see the spotty areas we own. That might be helpful, but I guess I've been out to King Lake, and it's, if you haven't been there, it's worth a trip. I don't think it needs to be mowed, so in general, I hope it's a real low priority for us, because no one's gonna bitch, no one's gonna complain that, gee, the weeds got 2 feet high. I'm not advising, I'm not officially saying that's what we should do, but keep it as a low priority if we end up buying more. That's all.
Director Irvin?
Sorry, I got, it's probably my fact that I was in the Army for a long time, but I got so lost on what we were trying to do with all the sidebar conversations. So there's this land, this FEMA money that we are buying. There's been several apportionments of land, and we have five of them we got to vote on today. We have no plan for them other than we take on responsibility, pay the taxes, maintain them. But then as far as what these parcels of land do, we just let them stay there?
Yeah, so... So an acquisition project is actually one of the most cost-effective flood mitigation projects that there are.
Okay.
And so the idea is that we go in, we give the homeowner, one thing I didn't mention, the appraisals are done at pre-damaged value. So they're done before the 2019 flood, what was there. This allows people to sell a home that has been damaged and relocate to a safer area. And so then part of that, we then have to clear the area of any structures, and it's deed restricted in perpetuity, so there's only very few things that we could do. Some things that we have talked about but haven't done to date is perhaps some community gardens. There are people in King Lake who are working on food insecurity, as well as, you know, just building a community out there. And so we've had some kind of initial conversations with them. We just haven't moved forward on that at this time. Some of the land that we do own is fully treed out. And, you know, it's mature trees. It's no maintenance. Others that are adjacent to existing homes, the homeowners will mow it. They use it like a lawn. So it's a mix of stuff out there. We don't do a lot of day-to-day maintenance. We're not mowing this like it's our own lawn. It's not getting mowed once a week, but you know, the bigger stuff I do try to get people out there. I need to get someone out there. There's a bunch of tree debris that's just kind of been, it's not hurting anyone right now. It just needs to be picked up.
Yeah, no, sorry. I didn't mean to like sound like an inquisition, but yeah. So you hit a bunch of the main parts. It's one, we have to clear those structures. Two, it's just gonna be, you know, flood mitigation land, so people can't build there. It's protecting them. But are we doing any land improvement, like dike or barrier, or just clearing the land so when it floods, it should? Okay, no, that was awesome. Thank you.
And it floods often.
Yeah, by the picture, it looks like it. Yeah.
We planting milkweed, big patches of milkweed for monarch butterflies. Community gardens,
yeah,
I guess.
We can look at stuff like that. Haven't done it yet, but it is on my list to try to get some more involvement with the residents out there.
Director.
Sorry, when is the FEMA money acquired after this? And is there a possibility that it can be canceled in between the transaction and when we receive it?
No, so the FEMA money is there. It is a reimbursable program, so we'll pay up front and get the reimbursement. Again, this is a 2019 grant, so it has been obligated. It's been fully funded. We're significantly under budget. The project is underway, so I don't have any concerns about this being removed.
Thank you. That's all.
And again, we've how many other properties do we have? And we've been doing this, and this is the last of it, so...
This is the last of this grant.
Okay.
So the grant period of performance is expiring.
All right, any further questions? We will vote on item 8, Alpha. Do we have a motion?
Second.
I might have already had it. Okay, 8 Alpha 24116 Curtis Avenue.
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Vice Chairman?
Yes. Item 8B, 6320 Riverside Drive.
So again, this is the same owner, and this this property did have structures on it. He did present an alternate appraisal for $65,000, which we've accepted. No duplication of benefits, so he is entitled to receive the full appraised value. FEMA covers 75%, and our community development block grant through the Department of Economic Development will cover the other 25%. And I can answer any questions you have on this one.
Directors have any questions for staff?
Yeah.
Questions? Seeing none, move to roll call on item 8B to purchase 6320 Riverside.
You need a motion?
As you were.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, and a motion. Any questions or comments from the public? Staff, directors? Roll call.
Adams?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Item 8C, Riverside Drive parcel.
So this one, again, is the same owner. This is a smaller parcel that he owns with the other two that we just approved. And so he doesn't want to hang on to this one lot. And so he has asked the district to purchase this as well. This will not be covered by the grant. The appraised value is $5,440. And if it helps, this lot is mature with trees, so it will be very little maintenance.
All right, then. Do I have a motion on 8C?
Second. Or I'll motion.
All right, motion by Adams. Yep.
I'll second.
Second by Irvine. Any discussion? Further discussion? Any comments from the public? From staff, directors?
Vacant land. Lots of trees, lots of mess, lots of poison ivy, and some phragmites on that lot, too, by the way, I found today.
Snakes.
Wolf spring.
Any other directors? Seeing none, roll call for 8C Riverside Drive parcel.
Urban?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Heiser?
No.
Hubbard?
Yes.
Vice Chairman?
Yes. Item 8D, 24637 Camellia.
This parcel is owned by a Linda James. Again, same thing, same grant. This was appraised at $15,000 from the appraisal that the district acquired, and she has accepted that. 75% covered by our FEMA grant, and 25% covered by the Department of Economic Development grant.
Okay. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second by Director Irvine. Any comments, questions from the public? Staff, directors, Director Adams.
I guess it would help to see a map, and knowing that this is the last round, do we now have a fully contiguous set? No.
But I do have that map, and I'll get it to John tomorrow.
Okay. It's contiguous enough.
The original idea was to purchase the area, basically the whole area, as much as we could. And you'd be surprised, like right after flood, we've got a list as long as Lori's arms, they're interested. And then as time goes, those start falling off. And So you just can't respond fast enough to get what the, it's still fresh in people's mind.
Thank you.
Maybe a silly question. Is there a lake?
So it's an old oxbow of the Elkhorn River. And it's been kind of disconnected from the river long enough that when it rains, there is some water in there, but it's mostly kind of marshy. I wouldn't say it's not necessarily dry, but it's not, you know, there's not water you can.
Stagnant swamp. A stagnant swamp.
We have a motion on 8D. That we already had that. You were the, go ahead. And any more comments from directors?
We have an emotion, right?
So many of these, I'm going through them. All right, here we go. Roll call, 8 Delta.
Hubbard?
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Vice Chairman?
Yes.
All right, item 9, Lower Platte River Subregional Groundwater Modeling Professional Services account over 110%. Philip.
Bates.
Yep. Yeah, good evening, directors. I think this is the first time I've ever had to come before you with one of these, so that's fun. This project's part of a 3-year project to develop our groundwater model that we're putting together with Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and the State Department of Natural Resources. So the three phases of this, when I originally budgeted this out, was to have some of the, like, there's less actual high dollar billing hours that goes in the first two kind of phases of the initial model planning, development, data collection, and the initial parts of the model construction. And so, and then that, the larger amount of the budget, the way I'd originally planned it, would come in during the model calibration, which was, I was expecting to happen around July. And so what has happened now is that the first year, things went as about as expected. I was slightly below where I had budgeted it, and that was good. Starting in towards the middle of this year's budget, we were waiting for a while for the State Department of Natural Resources to finish some of the work on their regional model, so that way we could kind of make our smaller district model talk with the larger. Got it back. Consultants looked at it, and there's a few questions. We did a little bit of extra work on that to make the two talk in terms of talking water across those boundaries, in terms of determining where our water layer boundaries are, DEMs, connections for the streams, things like that. And so that came in a little bit higher than I was expecting. That's okay. Work forward to this date. Things have kind of, the process of model development's moving faster than I was expecting, where I was expecting a lot of this initial model calibration to come in at the beginning of July, like right at the end of this fiscal year. It's now coming in starting in March. So it's about 4 months, a little bit faster, when we started doing some of this initial model calibration. And so because of that, and the rate of it, and when we're expecting to have this done here still towards the beginning of October, I'm coming for you now to try and move some of that fiscal, that year budgeting that would have been next year's budget that we're working on right now, and it's getting kind of moved over into this year's budget. And so overall, the project's still on track for the same budget. It is just having to retime some of that work to be a little bit quicker than what I was originally planning when I came across and worked on this budget a year ago. So with that, since I, right when I came to write this memo, I got an invoice that would put me over the 110% at the very end of, right after I had to have memos in for last month's budget, or last month's meeting, subcommittee meeting. Okay, I just got one and another one in a couple days ago, and it was a smaller amount, so the amount that'll be over will be less than what's in this memo, because I was having to estimate that larger amount of billable hours. So the second, and this is kind of one of those things where it goes up and down, where a large number of hours and then smaller, and it just happens to be when their people doing the main construction of the model bills HDR, and they just kind of do it in pulses. And so my prediction of when those pulses are is not the greatest, because it's not really consistent in any kind of manner. And so when I wrote this memo, I had to go with a little higher amount just to make sure we didn't get ourselves in trouble and have to come before you again here come June. And so what will actually be done for this fiscal year will be less than this full amount that I have in here continuing on, but about at least $67,000 less. And I'm pretty certain next month will be a little bit of a smaller amount too, but this, the way this memo was written when I wrote it, those are the numbers. I can answer anything about the modeling process or questions.
All right. Well, with that, well, it's, just for discussion, do we have a motion on this? Do we have a second?
A second.
Second for Irvine. Okay, Director Irvine. Any questions from the public, staff, directors? Questions for directors.
I don't have really a question. When I was reading this before, it's like this went over my head as to what this is.
Yeah. Okay. The model itself, or
yes.
Okay. Yeah. So a groundwater model is a way of that it is a. You can look at it as a computer simulation, built off of past observations. Of what is happening in and around for inputs and outputs for a given aquifer system. And so so we look at things like the precipitation, split it off for recharge, pulling out from wells, how does that affect water coming from streams being pulled in through induced recharge, outflow downstream, where that's not intercepted, things like that. And so it's a way of us getting back to trying to help inform some of the management decisions that are done based on, so if we have a change in development in an area, so it goes from largely agrarian to having wells come offline, become hardscapes, how does that affect the overall recharge to the system, to an aquifer system, the supply groundwater levels. You can also, depending on how it's constructed, use that to get back into some of the water quality questions. So you can put in Phaeton transport methodology. So you can do, so if you have a contaminant in one area, like a point source, you can see in Phaeton transport where is that going to be timed in the amounts and the locations. And this is part of our overall, and so for this model, it's being constructed primarily to help answer some of the questions that we have with the Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, Nebraska Department of Natural Resources for our Lower Platte Basin Coalition allocations. So how water is being pulled in and out of the Platte by the different entities up and downstream. And so from that, we say how many acres we can have, what kind of depletions to the stream are we allowed. And this will kind of help answer some of that questions of like how much of that water, where, the timing of it, and how much it's, and far into the future will that new usage cause problems. It's, I'd love to sit down and I got this is some
this is his thing.
And so I can explain, and with more graphs and pretty things that it's a little bit easier to explain.
Okay.
Director.
Who accredited the modeling tools? What's its parent model? Like, is it like there's some that are like riverbed model or riverbed modeling? There is who designed the tool?
Oh, so this model, it's so like this, the model itself is built off of the ModFlow platform that was developed by the USGS. This is being built in ModFlow 6. It is a free modeling software, originally encoded in Fortran, and now it has like a
Fortran.
Yeah, and now that's has a Python 80s. Wrapper on top of it, so okay. You can interact a lot more easily without having to do a whole 50, 60 different text files to make any kind of changes. And so,
sadly, working for the federal government, I
yeah
really understand Fortran wrapper probably more than I should. But it is accredited by
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, this is ModFlow, used all over the world. I can make these changes. People in the other two NRDs can make changes, and the state can. And this is all, and when this is done, this will be available to the public for free.
Okay, so you are fluent in the modeling language. You will be able to operate it in the house. Okay.
Mr. Adams.
So oftentimes on a project, it sounds like the 612, 823 will stay the total, but if we pay earlier, right, in, more in year one, less in years two and three, does that end up lowering the overall price, or do you expect it to stay the same?
Is the work that needs to be done is the same. It's just the timing of it's kind of moving ahead a little bit. So instead of it being the beginning of year three, when a lot of the work's being done, it'll be of the fiscal year. It'll be towards the end of this fiscal year, which is why it's such a consternation.
Yeah. For sure. The time value of money usually changes it. Yeah. Okay.
Director McCormick?
Things are moving too quick, or moving quickly. I hate saying, oh, that's terrible.
It's a good thing.
Will we end up with something after this? Or is there more? Is there the next step? Make it functional to do whatever is.
No. So when this project's completed, all it is will be a fully functional, usable model. And so if we have an area within our district or near one of the other two districts, or it, we can make changes to whichever the types of inputs or outputs we want to determine.
We'll have to continue to feed this machine.
If you want to use New Year's data into the model, it'll have to have some work to update the model using that, you know, this will be 2023 data. And so if like year 2030, we wanted to update it with the last 7 years of things that have happened in the real world in terms of precipitation and land development and things like that, work will have to be done to update it. I mean, I'm capable of it. But because we're doing this in partnership with the state and the other NRDs, it probably would go to a consultant to be updated. But for usability and use, this can all be done.
It is likely going to feed a database, so you're going to have this living thing that'll help you predict.
I'm sorry, louder.
It's going to pull from a database, so likely you're going to have this living system that's going to aggregate all the data and be able to be useful for us in the long run, I think, is kind of what you're asking.
There'll be revisions that will require additional
only in the future if we see a large change in one thing or another that we don't feel that the current model is suited for. So if we see a huge shift of the next 7 years of it getting really, really dry, and we don't think that there's analogous years in the past that we can use for a scenario run, we can update the model to make those new, to reflect that new reality. But it's there's ways you can do that without having to do a full update to the model.
Like updating apps on your phone.
What's that?
It's like updating the apps on your phone.
Yeah. I know, it's a rabbit hole you can never get to the bottom of.
Yeah.
Actually, I have one more question.
Go ahead, Director.
Essentially, what you're looking for here is we've committed to the project. Mm-hmm. We've committed to the budget that you established. What you're needing to do is authorization to be able to spend more of it in this fiscal year and less in the next fiscal year. Yeah. It's not changing the model. It's not changing the program any.
No.
So it's just a matter of what you're asking is, hey, we got done quicker than what we thought we were.
Yeah.
We need to spend it this fiscal year rather than next year.
Yes.
So it's not increasing our total costs.
At this point, we are not expecting anything over. Once you hit calibration and you start doing validation work, you might have to do an extra few runs or changes, but it's not going to be any significant amount. And I don't want to do that if I can help it.
Will future iterations of the model be able to use like real time or hazard prediction? So since we've been talking about 2019 and the floods, is there any other potential uses for this? So we have an influx of water in some area. I predict higher nitrates and flowing to this area. Therefore, beware. Potentially,
so this is a little bit different than like a weather model, like you'd see. You can run scenarios where you have a higher a higher, let's say there's an area of 3-4 sections where you have a large impulse of nitrate, let's say, you know, there's a big fertilizer accident, a few, like, semi-cars pulled of nitrogen fertilizer overturned and they didn't get it all cleared out, you could run a scenario where you can see that plume go downstream and do predictions on it based on the current years. But in terms of it feeding new water level information, new precipit information, some of that has to be done separately. It can't really be done on the fly just based on the current calibration.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, and I have one question. Calibrating in March, what the reasoning for that?
Yeah, so that work is the initial run calibration. So in the middle of March, Long Spring, the consultant that's doing the model construction, they were able to get the regional model and our local model to run together, and so they ran it and use those results to start feeding into the model calibration parameters. And so doing that initial model calibration, saying you can change these things by this amount, these numbers by this amount, was all started at that point. Not a whole lot of model, I don't believe they've done any model calibration runs itself with pests to start doing the adjustments and seeing where the model adjustments is going to occur, but this is mostly the initial build out of the pest files themselves. They started building and writing out all the files they need to run the calibration itself. They started doing that.
Okay, nothing with water level or anything. That's what I was getting at.
No.
Okay. No. Okay. Thank you.
I think water levels are one of them. They have observation levels that we feed into it, but they also, they're allowing it to change the water levels up and down a little bit is a calibration parameter, since, you know, we interpolate between water level points anyway, and based on the geology we allow it to move a certain amount, but that's one of the parameters that's allowed to move in one of the files they've created.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah. Any other directors? All right, well, Philip, you earned it this time. Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Yes.
Urban?
Yes.
Adams?
Yes.
And Vice Chair?
Yes.
And we are, the FEL is adjourned.
Do we, Bennett? So before we adjourn, since he will not be here Thursday, we got a little presentation on Mr. Martin Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
He's retiring. He won't be at the next board meeting, so we got to get him now.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say a few words. And he wasn't going to be here tonight, and now he spent this beautiful evening with us. But so, Martin, yeah, as John mentioned, and he had announced this in the fall, perhaps you recall that. But the evolution of Martin. So Martin is set to retire prior to the June board meeting, and he won't be here Thursday. What a slacker, right? But we'll let him off the hook because he calculated, he's been to 553 board meetings in his career. So we're going to give him this one off. We won't worry about Thursday's meeting, but you don't get a walk out of here after 46 years, 5 months, and 6 days today without some recognition. No way, Martin. If you live in our district and you have not flooded, you need to thank this guy. Mm-hmm. He has led many, many large-scale projects, you know, including Union Dike Rehab, Western Sarpy, Clear Creek Levee, so many things. But his main job is to maintain the district's infrastructure, which is currently over 100 miles of levees and channels and over 100 dams. It wasn't when you started, and there aren't two Martins, so he's really kept up this pace. He does this very well. He does this with a great O&M staff, too. And we hear it all the time. He's the best at it. So he's got a big job. And there's so many things. I promised him I'd be brief. So there's so much work that he does that I can't talk about that. But what I'll talk about is just to talk about how he does all that work with unmatched level of expertise. unmatched level of patience, we've all seen it, and complete dedication. So on behalf of myself and all the staff, I hope you know how much we've learned from you. I've tried every tactic to keep you, and I might cry as a last resort. How much we've learned from you, and not just on your projects, like how you deal with people and your knowledge. And I mean, we've all benefited from working with you and seeing that. There's a few people in our district, another one's here in the crowd, but very few people who you can just interrupt whatever they're doing, and you can say things like, remember that interlocal from 1980? What did that say? Do we have an easement from 1994? Were we able to put a fence up there? Where's the key to that lock by the cabin? And they will, without making you feel like you've interrupted them, they will answer you immediately. We'll figure that stuff out. We'll be okay. But there is no replacing that, and we'll miss it, all of us. So you worked for Marlin 43 of your 46 years. I know he'd be wanting to wish you a happy retirement. And you've worked with me for the last three. And personally, I want to thank you for helping me learn a lot of aspects about this job that I needed to. And you did that. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun learning from you. Thank you. And the other thing that we absolutely need to say in a public meeting is this guy intended to retire last summer. And we, like I said, we ignored him. We wouldn't listen to his resignation letter. We've tried every tactic. I'm all but just not letting him out the door. And he did make the decision, in order for us to have a solid plan in place to replace him. I mean, that is dedication. He stayed for almost a full year here. And, you know, that's amazing, and that doesn't happen very often. And so we want to thank you for being so gracious with your time and your knowledge. And we wish you a happy retirement. I hope you and Sharon get to travel. And I hope you enjoy a lot of walks out here. And we insist that you come back and you visit us every chance you get, because we will miss you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because I've had a lot of board meetings over the years, and a lot of times it goes way too long. But I appreciated the opportunity all these years to work for the NRD. Because I, back when I was 22, 1978, that's when I started. So very green. Marlin was a big part of training me over the years. So learned from his experience. But Amanda also has taught me too. So you can never, you always learn new things as you get older. There's still things to be learned, I should say. So I appreciate the opportunity over the years that NRD provided for me. And working with the staff has been great too. Thank you.
All right, Larry, now you can adjourn.
Well, I guess we all got to say stuff about this. Yeah.
Thanks for setting the precedence on retiring.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Dan.
We'll miss him.
Are you adjourned?
Yeah, the L's adjourned. Right. Next month.
5:34.